The Critique by Thomas R. Cuba. Copyright 2017, Thomas R. Cuba. "Where's the conflict?" Glenn asked. Bill nodded. "You should introduce conflict within the first two or three sentences." "Readers become bored so easily these days," Rob observed, almost as if he wasn't even in the conversation. Becky, the poor girl at the podium, didn't know what to say, so she said nothing. It was Becky's first visit to the South Shore Interactive Writers Self-Improvement Forum. Her friend Julia had told her that the meetings were fun and educational. Julia had said that one writer would read a page or two from his latest work, and the others would then offer advice on how to make it better. On Becky's first day, that same Julia was nowhere to be found. Julia had decided to be sick. As Becky's gaze roamed through the faces at the table in front of her, her jaw not quite slack, but loose enough that her lips had parted, allowing her to hide her exasperation by mouth-breathing, she wondered if Julia had set her up. The Critique, as it was called, continued. One by one, the others in the room criticized Becky's story. "The third sentence is almost, but not quite, a run-on. You have three phrases in there, all with action verbs. You might be able to break that up a bit. But don't make it choppy, nothing too short. In your fifth sentence, you use the word garbled. That word is not very familiar, and you might want to say muttered instead." "Oh, I disagree completely. Both garbled and muttered are continually overused. Try unintelligible. Let's use our art to increase the vocabulary of the reader, not sequester it within the commonplace. And then there is this tricky little flow problem. I think you've created it for yourself by writing yourself into a box. The story jumps from one place to another instead of gracefully, eloquently flowing. The reader should almost drift through the words and not have to pay so much attention." Within the row of critical faces, Becky found one, and only one, that did not appear to wear the same expression as the others. His was an unusual one, seldom seen before by Becky, one that seemed to be an odd mixture of disgust by a superior for her ineptitude and the kindliness of a mentor wishing to be constructive. That face belonged to a slender young man with sandy hair and deep brown eyes. The eyes gave him away. In his eyes, Becky saw compassion. He felt bad for her. Among them all, only he seemed to recognize the pain that she was in. Here on her first day, she had been selected as the first reader because she was new. Julia had told her that it was a fun and educational group, so Becky's normal defensive nature, where her writing was concerned, had been set aside. The little paper nameplate in front of him told her that it was Bradley who looked back at her, expressing sorrow for her pain, with nothing more than his eyes. Bradley couldn't really see the pain in Becky. He sensed it, as if they had some ethereal connection. And he found himself seething on the inside. Outside, however, he maintained his normal air of submissive passivity. He would not criticize the work of this beautiful newcomer, if for no other reason than she may not come back. Bradley had been smitten from the moment that Becky entered the room. He wished for, but could not manufacture, a reason for her to sit next to him, although he knew that he wouldn't know what to say to her if she had. And there she was, crucified and lanced by the arrogance and arrows of his fellow members. The simile to that most famous crucifixion was not lost on Bradley, for he was a decent writer. But he admitted to himself that at least Christ had known it was coming. No longer capable of watching the literary dismemberment of this beautiful girl, he looked away. He stared at his blank writing tablet in an attempt to distance himself from the group. He would withdraw, as he had done so many times before to avoid the conflict Glenn so dearly loved. He picked up his pen and disappeared into himself. Bradley could feel his anguish blossom unaccountably into true feelings for the poor girl. The mixture of his initial attraction and how badly she had been treated congealed into what many might call love at first sight. The girl before him no longer seemed to be just a young woman. She appeared more like those famous paintings of fairies and sprites, sitting alone on a rock set in a glassy flat pond, emitting the soft glow of purity. Her jeans and blouse had faded away to be replaced by a gossamer, almost transparent gown. her body backlit by the setting sun which outlined every curve of her tender young womanhood. Bradley controlled himself. He had to. But after the meeting, he followed the leader of their group into the library. He found Glenn in the stacks. He was all the way in the back, hidden from all eyes but Bradley's. At first, he was only going to confront Glenn, but then he realized that the son of a bitch would do it over and over again to others. Bradley remembered his first day, too, the day Glenn welcomed him to the group with a virtual monograph on his ineptitude. He knew what he needed to do. In an instant, Bradley slipped the knife he carried for self-protection out of its hiding place and drove it into Glenn's back just below the ribcage and angled upward. At the same time, he clapped a hand over Glenn's mouth to muffle any sound that he might make. Bradley was glad that he'd remembered his ranger training so well. He hadn't used any of it since he'd been discharged after an unfortunate accident, an accident that had destroyed his will to fight, making him useless as a soldier. Glenn crumpled to the floor. After leaving the library, Bradley was surprised to see Becky sitting alone on a bench in the small park that abutted the Temple of Imagination. He liked to call the library the Temple of Imagination. He did things like that all the time, feeling that the commonplace and simple titles used by the unimaginative common people failed to convey the magnitude of the service such a building provided. Becky was crying. Bradley was going to sit next to her, but as any gentleman would, he asked permission. Becky recognized his as the one non-aggressive face in the room and gestured her approval. Their conversation was simple and polite. Bradley said everything he could, all the right things, to assuage her wounded soul and soothe her bloodied ego. She asked if he had liked her work. He admitted that he did, although in his honesty he felt that there might be room for a little spit polish. The reference made Becky smile. No one said things like that anymore. From across the park, the two riders watched as an ambulance and two police cars arrived at the temple. Bradley suggested that they leave and avoid the hubbub that was sure to follow. With no place to go, and Becky still feeling hurt and not wishing to be alone, she invited him for tea in her apartment. It was just one block away, she'd explained. She'd rented that particular space because it was located halfway between the library and the university where Becky was taking creative writing class. Once inside, and somewhat calmed with cold raspberry mint tea, Bradley still sensed her uneasiness. He carefully explained that Glenn would not be bothering her anymore. When she asked why, he inexplicably decided to tell her the truth. Surprisingly, Becky was not appalled at his admission. She thought it was the truest expression of love that she'd ever known. Slipping off her airy and delicate gown, she thanked Bradley with her nakedness. Becky thanked him again and again throughout the afternoon. And then she was crying. She stood at the end of the bed in all her nakedness and was crying. Bradley's mind drifted. Becky's blouse once more covered her breasts. Bradley drifted again, and Becky smiled at him, once again, but sadly, as the lady on the rock did. For the next 5 or 6 seconds, Bradley's mind drifted back and forth over that fine boundary between reality and a creative imagination. Bradley put his pen down, and his mind settled on reality, and he found himself staring into Becky's wet blue eyes, eyes that said, "Thank you for not criticizing my work." "Okay," Glenn said energetically as he excused Becky from the podium with a gesture. "Who wants to read next?"